You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Well, hey, everybody. It's me, Joe Thrash and Kill. You're listening to another thrilling episode of the Toilet of Hell radio show. Joined today by the golden boy, the 365 Days of Horror, or as I like to call him, Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Well, I know that I started the show last week by describing in graphic detail that I was sick. And I would like everyone out there to know that I was a foolish child, because I'm so much far sicker now than I was last week.
The Cal Ripken-like streak of being sick continues unabated.
My body has the incredible ability to turn regular air into choking mucus and all bland foods and waters into straight liquid shit. So when I finish my shifts this week, I am actually going to go see a doctor, because I am miserable.
Now is the time for you to record lots of vocals so you can finally get that big money contract from Maggot Stomp Records.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. Now I can do the gutturals, because I've just been coughing nonstop for almost a month. So
now, did you get better and then you went out and made it worse, or has it just been straight, like, you work, you go home, and you're still sick forever?
Yeah, I have some days where I'm like, I think I'm over it. I think I could probably eat like a grilled cheese sandwich instead
Ooh,
of
fancy.
Instead of nothing, or more likely one of the insurers I pack in my lunchbox instead of real food.
So like, by the time you do finally get better, you're going to be like shredded. You're going to have the Jesus on the cross, six pack abs look.
No, I'm there for sure. I've lost, I don't know how much weight, man. I got no muscles left. This is pitiful. I suck.
You don't need Wegovy. You have Wejovy.
Exactly. Yeah. Instead of looking at Ozempic, I cannot suggest enough getting multiple infections of some kind and leaving them completely untreated.
I mean, that's why the people in the prairie days were always so thin and fit.
Yeah, man. You ever see the witch, you know, the patriarch in that family with, you know, the real husky deep voice or whatever? He's shredded as fuck. Because he gets like 3 calories a day and he has dysentery.
A little bit of consumption helps the medicine go down.
Agreed. Not 100%. So if at some point I have to pause this show, it's because I'm going to be violently ill. But no worries. I'll be right back to the action so we can recap you on the latest, I don't know, Tommy Vex news or something like that.
Well, people can sign up for the Patreon to get all of the stuff that you edit out, all the hacks and coughs and just horrible swear words that we're not allowed to use on this show.
Exactly, exactly. Well, how about you? How are you, Jordan?
I'm doing okay. Finally caught up on some sleep. I've been dealing with fake spring. I don't know if they have fake spring by you.
We do, yes. It's currently fake spring. We are due for one more extreme cold snap, and then it'll just be hot again.
Yeah, like 2 weeks ago, it was 50s and 60s, and everyone's like, ah, spring is here, and then it dropped down to the 30s. And just yesterday, we got like over 3 inches of rain all
nice.
Day. And in some places, like in the like higher northeast New England area, they actually got snow. And so fake spring we're dealing with right now. So soon it will be actual spring, and then it'll be horrible summer.
Cannot wait for those boiling temps, brownouts, and various melting things out front. It should be a lot of fun.
So when they say it's a cruel, cruel, cruel summer, it will actually be a cruel summer.
This is the cruel summer of our discontent, or whatever the fuck Shakespeare said. We have a couple of things on this episode, but it's less structured than you might expect one of our tightly scripted shows to go.
Yeah, usually we're a well-oiled machine, but this week we're letting bolts and screws fly out of the hull as the metal crumples around us from the pressure being 10,000 leagues under the sea.
Yeah, we're pretty much a Boeing factory over here. We have a couple of things I would like to get out front so that they are not forgotten in the back half with these bigger subjects. But you messaged me this weekend some cover art that frankly chilled me to the bone. Can you describe what it is?
It is our good friend Tommy Vext, who put out an album a few months ago, and you know, obviously it's burning up the charts since people are talking about it constantly. His solo album, sometimes I see it under the name Tommy Vext, sometimes I see it under The Lone Wolf. It's, I don't know, it just sounds like all of his other stuff. And this was like what he did through Patreon and raised like $90,000. So he put out this album, Antarctica, and it's all acronyms, and I don't know what that actually stands for.
And this is the album that's available exclusively through the paid Tommy Vext app, right?
Yeah, at least at this point. I mean, I'm sure it's out there. We just haven't bothered to look because...
Yeah, who gives a shit?
I think it came out in like November, so it's floating out there if you really want it.
Yeah.
But the reason why we bring this up is because a new video was put out, and whatever, we know what it sounds like. But the reason why we're talking about it is because of the single, and I'm doing air quotes because the album's already out and it's not like this is going to be played anywhere. It's for the song Gods and Monsters, which I don't think it's, was it the Ian McClellan movie where he's a secret Nazi?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, I don't think that's what this is about, especially after looking at the lyrics. But it features CJ McMahon. Do you remember CJ McMahon?
I do remember CJ McMahon. He was, when we last caught up with them, having one of the worst public flare-ups I think I've ever seen after he was... And I don't want to, you know, use the words that the right wing likes to use, but there was no more appropriate way of saying it than cucked out of his own band's album.
Erased from history of their most recent album and replaced with some guy.
Yeah. There were a lot of, you know, wailing and gnashing of teeth and such. Actually, in a couple of weeks ago, I saw a image of him looking... very bloated, stuffed into a poorly fitting suit, with some caption that he was apparently now working as a registered realtor, which, you know, that absolutely fucking checks out to me.
Yeah, it's those who can't do teach and those who can't teach sell realty.
That's true. Boy, that reminds me of a professor that I had in college, now that you think about it. Yeah, the exact same thing right now. That's why I'm so smart. So in addition to, you know, working in the tightly regulated and extremely noble profession of realtor, he is striving for, I don't know, what is it? Outrage dollars, cancel cash. What would you describe it as?
The last refuge of someone who has been canceled is when they all kind of like band together and create their own little insulated network for people who agree with them and no one else, and it pays off in the short run, but in the long run
they knife each other in the like fucking throat.
You have nowhere else to go, so this is like the rest of your life. It's kind of so Aaron Lewis still has Stan to fall back on where they can play real venues, but without them he is just, you know, playing third-rate casinos about hugging his grandpappy's gun and hating Joe Biden.
Yeah, everyone else is Henry Hill at the end of Goodfellas. He's like, now I'm here, you know, I order fucking spaghetti, they bring me egg noodles, and I got to live like a fucking schnook the rest of my life.
Yeah, I guess this is the equivalent of having to move out to Wyoming after living your life in New York City.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're alive, but at what cost?
Yes, exactly.
And this is the musical version of that. Yes, you could still make music, but you're doing it with people like Tommy Vext, who can sort of make a sustainable living doing this, but the returns are going to be smaller and smaller. There's only so many out there of a finite group that will continue to give you money. And sooner or later, those people are probably going to die of long COVID or like unchecked diabetes.
Yeah.
So the money will dwindle eventually. I'm sure at some point he'll create some other band. If Trip Eason can create another band and like go play shows and get press out of it, he can do it too.
Surely.
But the reason for bringing this up is because of the single cover art for this song is just bad AI of Tommy Vext and CJ McMahon. Tommy is he's an in shape guy, however you want to come to that conclusion of how he does it. He is looking approximately 300 pounds in this picture. Like he is much larger than he actually is in real life, which is unfair to him because he doesn't quite look like that. He sort of looks like an out of work pro wrestler.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Like he's still big, but he's cycled off of whatever vitamins he's taking. So like there's less definition and he's just looking a little bit
He's
thicker and thumb-like.
the actual bro science term for that is bloofy. That's what it's called when you've got all that steroid weight and you're not really cutting it off.
I thought that was what, creatine bloat, same thing.
Similar. Yeah, if you're taking, you probably got a cocktail, my man.
And it looks like he appears to have a handgun attached to him on the side.
Why not?
And CJ McMahon is next one. And this is all very brown, by the way. It's
Yeah.
shades of sepia tone. There's not a bright color to be seen on this. CJ McMahon is standing next to him with a very bored look on his fake face. And appears to have tactical belts, multiple ones attached to him, possibly a suicide vest with a shirt that appears to have multiple bullet holes in it.
He is looking very Rob Liefeld in this, in that he's got pouches all over that he can't possibly have a use for.
Just keeps his snacks in there, some guitar picks, some medicine, whatever he needs is right there.
What I like about this single art is that it really reminds me of the heyday of like VHS movie covers, like where all the actors are poorly airbrushed in. Like this could easily be like Cops and Robertsons, you know?
Oh, like all of Tubi's pictures?
Yeah, exactly.
Where it's like the same actress is just mirror imaged and flipped to the other side, so it looks like she's someone else.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But yes, judging by this, Tommy Vext is outweighs CJ by a good 250 pounds.
And the thing is, of course, like most of AI stuff, you don't need to do any of this.
No.
Like, no one would have cared if you just took one picture of one of them and the other and just Photoshopped them side by side. That's good enough. And there's also a music video. You could just take a screen grab from that and put it in.
Absolutely. Speaking of which, this video, Gods and Monsters, I watched it because, well, hell, I guess I got nothing else to do. I didn't. Is CJ McMahon in this video anywhere? Because if he is, I didn't fucking see him.
I don't think he is. I mean, you barely see the rest of the band in the video, and they're supposed to be in Antarctica in, well, it says Area 15, which is a club in Las Vegas. So I
Yeah.
don't know if I would assume they're in the actual club, but it also has the guitarist who was in Once Human, who used to be a Machine Head, the guy with the dreadlocks who
Oh
just
yeah.
never wears a shirt.
Yeah, that guy.
Well, he is not wearing a shirt in the supposed Antarctica pyramid that they're playing in.
So we've heard a lot of music from Tommy Vax. A lot of it is the slowed down pop song cover variety, but this one is a little bit more in your face, you know. I don't know, picture in your mind if you can that one Meshuggah riff. And then some aggressive Slipknot-esque rapping on top of it, and that is exactly what this is. It also includes what may be the laziest guitar solo I've heard in modern metal in God knows years, years.
It does also have that very smooth chorus that he's known for.
Very smooth chorus, very ripped off of many, many bands that have come before them.
Did you read the lyrics?
I did. I couldn't hear what he was rapping too well, so I had to read the lyrics. And knowing now what he's rapping in the song, all of the images in the video, it's kind of interesting that none of it forms a single cohesive unit at any point whatsoever.
No, it never does it?
It does not. And here's the thing, this is not like an amateur job. People were hired for this. This was likely an all day or 2 day affair. And at no point was anybody like, what if I came up with one idea for this? Instead, it is a bunch of maybe fractions of ideas kind of tossed together. And the end result is kind of this gray goo really reminds me of oatmeal. Perhaps a gruel. Not a lot
What
going on.
really stuck out to me is the one line which made me chuckle. Let me see if I can find it here. You made a crackhead Christ.
Okay, that one was, and I feel like that's a pretty evocative image, and something could have been done with that, but no, nothing was done with it. If you, it's okay with you, we can go through the entire lyrics here.
Sure, we can run through it quickly.
Sure, this was released last week. The year is now 2024, so of course it opens up with this scam, goddamn, it's pandemonium. Which I feel like if he was a better wordsmith, the plandemic might have been put in there somewhere.
It could be any scam. We don't know what scam he's talking about.
It's worth noting that at many points in this video, Tommy Vex is wearing a ski mask that says pure blood on it, which I believe is some dumb COVID bullshit. I don't know. It's fucking 2024. I don't have to give a shit about the fucking binky these people hold on to. This scam, goddamn, it's pandemonium. You can forget what you don't know, I guess. If you took a motherfucker dug deep enough, you couldn't find the ground without gold.
Can I stop you 2 seconds? So these lyrics are from the, is this, well, I don't know if it's officially Tommy Vex. I assume it is.
I
It says
believe it
Tommy
is.
Vex with the little,
Yes. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
official artist channel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's, for someone who doesn't want to be canceled and censored and all that, the lyrics are censored on this.
They are, in fact. Yeah. Mother F at symbol CKER, etc.
I guess that's so
But
you're
it's,
allowed to still make money off ads.
yeah, because you get demonetized otherwise. And we all know what the purpose of this is. So there you go.
Okay, continue.
All of that made a lot of sense to me. I don't know about you. The scam, goddamn, it's pandemonium. You can forget what you don't know
I
if you
think it's
took.
supposed to be can't because there's an apostrophe in there, but there's no T.
Okay, so they just need a spell checker. And then if you took a motherfucker, dug deep enough, you couldn't find the ground without gold. And I gotta say, that one, I'm gonna mark a little squiggly red line on it and just put a question mark next to it because I need you to explain further.
Syntax.
Yeah, contents drowned. Sure. The constant wanderer, you never seek to save your own soul. The master's lust, so cancerous. Again, lust has a capital L in front of it. Odd. A totalitarian tiptoe goal. Jordan, have you ever heard of anything called a tiptoe goal in your life?
Tiptoe touchdown, but probably not a tiptoe goal.
Was this song written with ChatGPT?
I would not be surprised.
Nor would I, because this
I mean,
is.
what do you want to admit to? It's written by a computer program, or you were very, very stupid when you wrote this, or possibly severely concussed.
This is the kind of work that you can only get out of a computer that doesn't actually understand what syntax is, or someone who has brain damage. Absolutely. Anyway, our chorus here is fuck the masters and break the chains inside your mind. Play the victim. You made a crackhead Christ. Now, again, I am generally opposed to AI in all forms being used to make art, but I am compelled by the image of the crackhead Christ, and I wish that it was used in some way here. Can you feel?
I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. So I understand, fuck the masters and break the chains inside your mind. Okay,
Sure.
that's high school level writing, but I
Yeah.
can understand that. Play the victim, you made a crackhead Christ. So who's the victim? Are you the victim after saying fuck the masters? Are you the crackhead Christ?
It's tough to say. Again, when we're grading this paper, which it is going to have an unhappy face on it, I am going to need additional detail from Mr. Vexed. He will see me after class.
There's going to be a see me written on top of it, and it will not pass whatever program lazy teachers use now to see if their students use the AI.
Yep. Can you feel the weight when the darkest demons conjured? Can't you see that it's on my face? When the world's filled with gods and monsters, I'm scared. Scared for all humanity and what you do not know. Burn it down and turn around until we find a future for the unborn.
Oh.
If you think again. Because the answer is never arcane.
Okay, this has to be AI, because that makes no sense.
No. Eyes seek blindness so their crown can reign.
What?
Complete fucking gibberish. Interminable. May God have mercy on your soul. So, again, we go through the chorus again, the crackhead Christ, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Not good. Not good, man.
I think the one thing that we can all get out of this is one of the most upvoted comments, and when I say most upvoted, it has 7 likes, is from someone with a Smash Cultural Marxism avatar.
Interesting.
Mega Metal. Love it. Flexi bicep emoji.
All right. And this, again, is why people pivot to this, MAGA-esque ghetto for making music. It's because it's really easy to please these people. So there you go. That is Gods and Monsters, maybe not featuring the deposed transphobe from Thy Fart is Murder.
I found the answer in the comments.
What is it?
Someone asked, no CJ McMahon in this one? And Tommy Vexed Official replied, this is the original version released the same day as CJ's mix.
Okay. Well, I will not be investigating the other one because I got to tell you, I don't give a shit. How about you?
I mean, what could it possibly add?
You're adding so many levels to this. Answers all the questions we had here. My fucking
maybe that's literally the case, is that all of CJ's parts clarify what Tommy's saying.
It's not like
vocals. It's just spoken word. It's like what Tommy is saying here is,
I gotta tell you, man, my suggested videos on the right sidebar are fucking atrocious, and it's all because of this stupid show. Let's see. First up, there is Flat Black, which is that guy that quit Five Finger Death Punch, and his new single featuring Corey Taylor. So kill me for that. More Tommy Vex stuff. the Shredders, Marilyn Manson, et cetera, et cetera. I fucked up pretty bad. I fucked up my YouTube recommendos terminally.
Incognito mode.
It's too late. It's too late for me. Moving on a little bit. Is there anything relevant that happened immediately you want to get on the show to be newsworthy?
Cypress Hill turned Simpsons Orchestra joke from 1996 into reality.
God bless. So we all remember the Hullabalooza episode. It's a classic, classic golden era Simpsons episode in which Peter Frampton gets his London Symphony Orchestra bogarted by the likes of Cypress Hill.
Do you know Insane in the Brain? We mostly know classical music, but we can give it a shot.
Yeah. I'm really excited. I think that that will be a great time for everybody that gets a chance to see that.
It's kind of like when a few years ago they did, I think, in Los Angeles, a bunch of Simpsons songs with the orchestra, and Conan O'Brien came out and did the monorail song with them.
Oh, that's great.
So it's kind of like people our age can, I don't know, enjoy a thing that we could see at any time, but live and with celebrities.
I mean, there is surely a few, like, you know, probably tech millionaire millennials that are going to like fly all the way to London to see this because they remember the silly joke from an episode when they were kids. It's gonna work. It'll be successful for everybody involved.
And then they'll get real scared when Cypress Hill plays any other song other than Insane in the Brain.
I don't think we ever talked about this, but the first time I ever got high was seeing Cypress Hill live in concert. It was
pretty appropriate.
It was, actually, now that I think about it. Really?
It's like of all places to do it, it's just like a Cypress Hill concert or like watching Cheech and Chong.
Yeah, pretty much. Some Mexican dude in the crowd handed me this insanely large blunt. I took a half a hit off that and was fucking baked.
The slow descent into madness began there.
Everything's been kind of downhill for me since then. Strange.
I think they made after school PSAs about that exact moment.
I remember distinctly that Cypress Hill had a massive Buddha with a weed leaf on its belly on stage. They called it the Stanky Green Buddha, as I recall correctly. Pretty good show. Pretty good show. What do you think? You gonna go see Billy Corgan nodding politely?
Probably not, because I think Smashing Pumpkin shows are insanely expensive now for some reason.
Weird. I wish nothing but success to DJ Muggs and the rest of the crew with the London Symphony Orchestra. I hope everyone has a good time.
Yeah, if people want to make Simpsons jokes from 30 years ago reality, but all the more power to you. Please do that. Please give us a little spark of joy.
I speaking of old ass shit. Now that I think about it, I saw something on Facebook, which, if you want to look at Facebook nowadays, it is bizarre. I only use it to buy stuff on Marketplace, but sometimes I look at the regular feed and it's nothing but like things suggested to me that I don't follow at all. And most of it, that is AI. So really bizarre alien experience trying to look through that. But something crept through it the other day that really resonated with me and appeared to resonate with several other people that I know, maybe just for very different reasons. Now, I think I had mentioned this to you, and I don't know if this is going to have the same kind of effect, but I would like to talk about it a little bit. This page, for whatever reason, reposted the Billboard Top 40 Modern Rock Tracks for the week ending March 9th, 2002. Do you remember that era of history?
2002, yeah, I was still in high school. March 2000, I was a junior in high school. And to your point about Facebook showing you weird things, it's, I think, in large part to groups that you follow or pages that you like. And it just is a constant flow of suggestions now because we are both like Toilet of Hell on Facebook. So it's just feeding us music stuff. So I've seen some of these too, where it's here's a random Heatseekers chart from 1995. And of course, all those are full of likes and comments going, ah, this is when music used to be good. And, because you like a sports team, you're just going to get like, I get random hockey things like hockey goalies 1970 to 1980, AHL. And it's like, okay, thanks for showing me, but I don't like this,
Sure,
but it's
sure.
just it's a constant echo chamber reel of here's a thing that you may be interested. Please stay on this website, even though most people have left it. Although I
No.
do have some people my age and slightly younger who constantly post things. It's like, use Instagram, use Twitter, use something else. How are you still here?
Yeah, I'm strictly here to buy tools on Marketplace that were probably stolen. Anyway, this stuck out to me in a way that like I think maybe is a little bit different for some of the other people I had seen sharing it around, because I remember this exact track list pretty much constantly being played on the radio. And I think this is the period in my life where I'm like, fuck, I think I hate everything.
So this is 2002, you said?
So to give some context for you, I think I was 14 at this period here. I was I think I just started high school or was about to start high school. And this was a period, I know that you and I have talked about this, where I was in a lot of trouble all the time. So I had like a period of a couple of years where I was consistently grounded and forced to do like a ton of manual labor.
Now,
So
was getting in trouble, was it worth it? Did you at least do fun
no,
things, or it was
no.
like you
And
stayed out till 10:05 instead of 10 o'clock?
no, I wasn't even like, I wasn't even having a good time, to be honest. I was having some strange hormonal changes and maybe some minor mental illness, and that was not really vibing well with the Baptist family that I was born into and stuff.
They
I don't want
found the Sears catalog swimsuit underneath your bed.
not even like that. I was just having trouble focusing in school, and I would this feels weird to talk about Joe stuff here, but like I couldn't make myself focus on like doing homework or anything like that, and I it would stress me out so much, and I would hide it, and then I would set an alarm for 3 a.m. and I would wake up at 3 a.m. and I would try to do it then, but I couldn't do it then because I was exhausted. And then I would just like get a zero on these assignments and my grades would tank. And like, I was just getting more and more frustrated with myself and like with everything around me. And, long story short, that led to like 2 years of, minor incarceration for Joe.
Yeah, that's one of those things where like someone could have helped you, I assume, at some point just to figure out what works and dealing with anxiety now. But 20 years ago, it was just you're a bad kid.
And I don't know, that period I guess has shaped me for better or worse in a lot of ways, and that I consider myself a pretty hard worker now, and I don't think I've ever been able to relax ever since then.
Yeah, but n now there's a lot more awareness of childhood anxieties and school problems. And, not to say things are necessarily better, but I guess there's more awareness of it. So there are options. When back then it was just, why did you fail? And you go, I don't know. I don't like school. All right, well, you're punished. Go mow the lawn. And it
And
doesn't help anyone.
well, it didn't help either that the one of the primary things I enjoyed most at that time was nu metal and like Aussie and shit like that. That was really what was what I liked listening to. And so, all my records got tossed out and all that posters and shit, everything was thrown in the trash and all that shit. But as I did, labor outside on this big property almost every day for a couple of years there, I had my little portable radio that I was listening to pretty much constantly, to the modern rock stations at the time, which was so I could still listen to the things that I liked for the most part, because nobody can stop me if I'm out there in the middle of the fucking field, digging a ditch or like mowing it. So I could listen to everything. So I know this modern rock tracks list for the week ending March 9th, 2002, pretty much back and forth. And this particular time, this is when I figured out that things that are meant for, I guess, a mainstream taste are maybe bad.
This is probably one of the last times that there was mainstream popular rock.
Yes, absolutely. And it really does seem crystallized in amber here, because a lot of the names we're going to talk about still fucking sell out stadiums.
Can I
So,
take a guess at some of the names that are on the list?
yeah, for sure.
Because I haven't seen the list. 2002, so Linkin Park,
Yes, there is Linkin Park.
Incubus.
Yes.
Corn.
No. Yes, they are on here, yeah.
Blink-182.
Yes.
Good Charlotte.
Not Good Charlotte. They might have been the next year.
B-b-b- Limp Bizkit.
I don't think they're on here, actually.
Yeah, that's good enough for now.
So let me ask you this. Would you prefer to go through this starting with the bottom 40 or starting with number one?
Let's start with the bottom and
Okay.
work our way up.
And I think this one is really an outlier among the others, but it's worth mentioning. Shinobi versus Dragon Ninja by Lost
Nice.
Prophets. I like that Rockabilia, that's a merch company, whatever intern they hired to use their Twitter account was like, we've got these dope Kanye slash Burzum shirts for sale. If you don't like it, it's you're a dickhead, you're a prude. And digging through the Rockabilia website last week, I found that they still sell, they are the official distributor of Lost Prophets merch.
There's just boxes and boxes full of them in their warehouse.
Yeah, surely. Anyway, I appreciate that these guys won't stand down to the cancel culture crowd. They'll still sell merch with the guy that is probably the most notorious pedophile in the history of rock and roll music. So pretty neat stuff. Up from there, 39, Flake by Jack Johnson, which I believe was the arrival of Jack Johnson upon the public consciousness, a scar that we may never heal from.
And isn't there like 10 or 15 other guys from around that area that might as well have been Jack Johnson?
Yes. What's different about this one, I think, was that he was maybe a former pro surfer, or at least pretended to be.
Back in
So,
the day where you could just lie about that stuff and no one could check up on you.
exactly. 39, Stillness of My Heart by Lenny Kravitz, which I don't really remember that one, do you?
I don't remember that one. And that's around the time where the Lenny Kravitz era was ending.
Yes, correct, correct.
A few years before his leather pants ripped open and everyone saw his dick.
His monster dong. Number 37, the first week on the charts, that would be Amber by 311. Yeah, again, another plague that is yet to be quarantined.
Shades of gold displayed naturally.
36, Sorrow by Bad Religion, which was kind of an odd one on there too.
I like that song. I like Bad Religion.
35, If You See Jordan by Something Corporate, which I had blocked that one out of my memory entirely. Truly obnoxious, awful song.
I don't even know that one.
The Something Corporate thing was the guy that also did Jack's Mannequin, and overall that was a
Yeah.
blight on the early 2000s and best left in the past.
I'm aware of that. I have never listened to any of that.
34.
And what's interesting is like no one's ever brought up that song to me specifically. You'd think they would.
It's I think that one's about, if I remember correctly, and again, it has been 22 years now since I've heard that song. I believe Jordan is like a high school bully. So, we'll
Well, then
we
perhaps people thought highly of me and didn't bring it up.
perhaps 34. This was a band I liked until this album and these singles came out. This is Stay Together for the Kids by Blink-182.
Oof. Oof.
That album sucks shit, dude. Contemporarily, I was like, man, what? This band used to be fun. Why are they like, oh, my parents are divorced? Who
I
fucking
miss
cares?
you.
Who fucking cares?
All those kids that love that song are now adults who are divorced, so
It's
there you
true.
go.
It's funny. 33. This would be the band moving out of the public consciousness until very recently. Movies by Alien Ant Farm. 32. Still hanging on the charts. Lateralis by Tool.
That's
Yeah.
surprising.
Yeah. 31. You've Got to Hide Your Love Away by Eddie Vedder. I think that was when
Okay.
he was doing his ukulele thing, pretty sure. 30, The One by Foo Fighters. That was the
Yep.
start of me not liking the Foo Fighters anymore.
Yeah, that's kind of when they changed.
Yeah. 29, Good Souls by Star Sailor, another band I have not seen or thought of once in 22 years. Ooh, really dark spot on his career here. Number 28, Never Gonna Stop by Rob Zombie. You remember that one?
Never gonna stop there. Yeah,
Never gonna stop.
that's when he stopped being like the scary nu metal Halloween guy and was just like, yeah, I like disco.
I feel like that song is exclusively the words "never gonna stop, man, never gonna stop, never gonna stop, man, never gonna stop" for like 4.5 minutes. That's it. It's a
So they
bad
did stop him.
song. 27, Bullets by Creed. Again,
Nice.
yeah, it's a pretty good one. Pretty good one. 26, Faithless by Injected, which I will be honest here, I don't remember that one. Do you?
Maybe if I heard it. I remember the name Injected, but again, this was at the time where there were bands named like Injected and Systematic and Mud. Just like one. We've gone back to the one word names. Switched.
25, Caught in the Sun by Course of Nature, which is the other one that I don't recognize from this list. Do you?
No, I don't know it.
24, Motivation by Sum 41. Again, this would be the tail end of their career here. 23, I Stand Alone by Godsmack. And I recall liking the Godsmack album that like they made it their first one essentially. And then after hearing all of the singles afterwards, like, oh, I think this is actually a bad band.
This was a Scorpion King song.
Yeah, well, this is my idiot mind learning how to form taste.
And it's good that you did, otherwise you would have kept listening to Godsmack and joined the Navy.
That's true. That's true. 20, My Sacrifice by Creed, which at the time, my friends and I would sing along to the choruses, "My ass is tight."
Oh, youth.
Yeah. 21, this is one I would like to call special attention to because I don't know if this one ever made headway in your part of the country, but it was a huge hit in the DFW and was baffling to me. This is "Hey Mister" by Custom. Have you ever heard that one?
I don't think so. How does that go?
This "Hey Mister, I really like your daughter. I like to eat her like ice cream, maybe dip her in
What?
chocolate." Dude,
Gross.
it is one of the most insanely misogynist songs I've ever heard. Even at the time when I am the target market for misogyny, I was like, this is dumb as shit. This song sucks ass. Why am I being subjected to this by these lecherous late night radio DJs every fucking night? It fucking sucks. I'd rather just listen to Loveline.
This is like Prime Man Show era too.
Exactly. Yeah. Apparently I 'cause I had to do some research on this because I thought that maybe this was something I only imagined, but it was real. This guy does have a Wikipedia article. This was his only hit. He died recently, good riddance. And the initial music video treatment that he had done for this was him in the White House trying to seduce the Bush twins. And it was pulled because he quoted, "Yeah, 9/11 happened."
Okay. That
Um,
was also probably around the last time where a random person could somehow get a hit.
yes.
Like they're not in a band, they're just a guy, or like they're a comedian. Like there is that really stupid song, United States of Whatever, that
Oh,
somehow
this is
got
my
airplay.
United States of whatever. Oh man,
Yeah.
I loved that one. That was Liam Lynch, I believe.
Yes,
He
hated
worked
that. Hated that.
that guy worked on Syphil and Ollie, I believe.
Syphil and Ollie good. That song bad.
History will vindicate me on this one. We'll get into this a little bit later.
I will listen to the Syphil and Ollie theme song 100 times before I choose to listen to that.
I would encourage our Zoomer listeners to check out the United States of Whatever and let us know who's right, Joe or Jordan, on this one. It helps that none of you have any idea what the fuck we're talking about.
Which you will. The power's in your hands. L look up that and then look up Syphil and Ollie theme.
Yeah. Number 20 on this list is "Defy You" by The Offspring. Now, I recall liking Americana and Ixnay on the Hombre quite a bit, and this is where I started to learn to loathe that band.
Ixnay and the Hombre, great record. Americana was their biggest hit. Well, actually, I don't think that's true. I think Smash was actually their biggest hit.
I think you're right, yeah.
But I mean, that was like platinum hit. Americana was very big as well, thanks to Pretty Fly for a White Guy. And then there was like what, Conspiracy of One, where they really started to fall off.
Yeah, where it became Guy Fieri core, you know, like everyone's wearing their flame shirts and doing these very jokey songs. It was not good. Not good.
I remember there was a around this time on Saturday Night Live, I think David Spade came back and did like a weekend update thing, and it was talking about the Latin invasion, where like Julio Iglesias and Ricky Martin and all that, and then he talked about bands like Smash Mouth and Offspring, and why aren't we calling this the White Douchebag Invasion?
It's a pretty good bit. That's not a bad bit at all. It's aged well. Number 19, Chop Suey by System of a Down.
Fair enough. Big hit. People still sing it at weddings for some reason.
Odd. Number 18, It's Going Down by Executioners, which is one of
Oh,
those things
that's
that was
fun.
really like a one of those things that could only happen at that time, you know?
Yeah, your mixture of rap and rocks, like biggest stars and a DJ, and Wayne Static is in the video for some reason.
Number 17. This is a song that I was unhappily reminded of the other a couple of months ago. I went to a bar to watch a football game, and this karaoke DJ unplugged the TVs so that he could try to get the crowd to sign up for karaoke, which no one ever did. So instead, it was just him singing to like a dozen disinterested people, and he opened it up with this song, "See in Red" by Unwritten Law. Number 16, "Toxicity" by System of a Down. System of a Down, we're really having a moment there.
Their biggest moments.
15, "The Way You Like It" by Adema.
The way you like it.
14, "This Is the Song That Taught Me How to Hate." "How You Remind Me" by Nickelback. Again, you got to remember, I am out in the fucking baking sun, strapped to this portable radio, and subjected to only whatever these DJs decide to play. And for some reason, the DJs decided they wanted to play "How You Remind Me" every hour on the hour, if not more often. And this song really taught me, like, wow, how is this? How could people like this? How could this be such a big hit? Why are they doing this to me? Can they not hear what he's saying? It's dumb as fuck. And again, I have a
It
child brain at this time.
launched their career, and it also launched lots of people hating them. So it's real monkey paw situation for Nickelback.
Number 13, "This Is One You Called." It's "Wish You Were Here" by Incubus. I've had numerous people try to defend that band to me, and I'm sorry, I am not interested. My dance card is full.
Yeah, I had friends who just loved everything Incubus did. And this was around the time where I just started to absolutely hate them. And then I had the realization, like, well, it's not the band's fault that people are annoying about them. I just will not listen to them.
Sure.
I'm not mad at them. I just want nothing to do with them.
That's the mature way of going about it. We have "First Date" by Blink-182. That's another really shitty song from that era of Blink-182. Do you remember that one?
Yes. I was never a Blink-182 fan other than enjoying Damn It when I was like 13 years old.
I mean, that's a perfect song when you're 13.
Exactly. And then I grew up and they didn't.
Yeah. We got another Nickelback song here with "Too Bad." Didn't really have the staying power of "How You Remind Me." Number 9, "Nice to Know You" by Incubus. Again, Incubus having a moment.
Goodbye.
"Nice to Know You." Number 7, "Last Night" by The Strokes.
Oh, yeah.
Which again kind of sticks out like a sore thumb on this list, and that to their credit, they use wildly different, production techniques that were in vogue than were in vogue at the time by sounding like a guitar-based rock band from the 70s.
Yeah, that was the start of the bands.
Right.
The Strokes, the Hives, the White Stripes, all those, the Vines. So that was the beginning of it. So probably within the next 6 to 8 months of that list, you'd see some of those bands popping up as well.
Absolutely. Number six, The Middle by Jimmy Eat World, which I'm an apologist for. I love that record. That record's great top to bottom, in my opinion. Number five, In the End by Linkin Park. Everywhere at the time. Still kind of everywhere now.
Still around.
Number four, this is one of those that, you know, you and I jokingly say, when we're trying to list bands that everybody forgot about, Wasting My Time by Default.
Wasting my time, cause it's not for real.
Yeah, big hit. Number three, Crawling in the Dark by Hoobastank. Again, that was everywhere.
That was a big hit, partially because I think people thought it was Incubus.
Yeah, probably. Number two, this one was a real stinker. Absolutely unbearable. Youth of the Nation by POD.
I mean, that was their biggest hit.
It was inescapable. It was awful.
And it was weird for me because prior to that song, I knew them from the song Southtown, which is much more nu metal and harder and about like growing up in the inner city and just, you know, trying to be tough and make it through the day. And then you have this song about like, well, yeah, it's still tough, but, you know, there's hope and things sound nice and we're going to go surfing.
Yeah. I preferred the theme song to Lil Nicky. Here Comes the Boom, Ready or Not.
The video where they play ping pong against Blindside.
Absolutely. And then, of course, number one, this is for all the lovers, Blurry by Puddle of Mud.
Still gets played on the radio.
Yeah. Do you remember the Puddle of Mud song, She Hates Me?
She fucking hates me.
One of the most irritating things to ever probably make somebody $1 million.
Yes. Well, you see, money doesn't buy everything, just looking at what Wes Scantlin's been up to in the past 10 years.
So in this period, I am kind of driving myself more and more insane by only listening to this, and I hate pretty much all of it, and I'm here listening to nothing but that, as I'm kind of like being tortured out in this extreme heat. But this is the period that led me to get out of what was easily available and try to find what I eventually settled on, which is whatever the fuck I guess I like. Like staying up super late on Sunday nights to listen to the programs on the rock channels that would like play things that they wouldn't play any other times. Like we had a program called The Adventure Club that would play rock from around the world that you normally would never get to hear on any kind of rotation on a clear channel station.
Now that's such a cool thing that you used to have is late night radio where they would take risks where they might play that or there'd be a metal show from midnight to 2 in the morning.
Yeah,
I know they still exist in some markets and some places, but like it used to be, here's the punk show on a Tuesday night at 11 o'clock. And I was lucky enough to grow up in an area where I had a lot of options on the radio because I was in New Jersey, which is, I have the New York stations, I have the Philly stations, and I have a ton of college stations too that at any given hour, you could hear just about anything. Like we had Seton Hall's Pirate Radio, which played metal all the time, except Sundays because they were a Catholic school and
that's
just
awesome.
Play church stuff. I had Princeton's station that, I mean, you could hear anything at any hour on any day. There was Rutgers, there was community colleges. So there was all sorts of stuff that you could hear at any given point that like weren't on MTV or weren't on a K-Rock or WYSP or things like that. So I had a lot of options. So, like while I could still hear what was popular and things like that, like I could turn on a station and hear At the Drive-In for the first time or Boy Sets Fire for the first time, just because some 19-year-old was working at their college station.
See, I would have killed for that because at the time, like, the internet was not really an easy source to, number one, get on reliably, or number two, to in any way listen to music. At the time, you're kind of at the mercy of whatever served to you or whatever, like, somebody's cool older brother knows, which in my circle was pretty fucking limited. So, you know, aside from things that I could find in, like, guitar mags or whatever, I was pretty desperately limited until I was able to fuck off to college early.
Yeah, you needed the one friend who had high-speed internet and a CD burner to go on mp3.com and show you what this metalcore is all about.
And I had a childhood friend who moved out of town, you know, when we were, like, in the fourth grade or whatever, that I would go visit, you know, every month or so. He had, you know, his dad was a big tech nerd, so he had that high-speed internet, and he would burn all these CDs of shit like Gwar on it for me. And it was the first way that I, like, got to experience a ton of different music at once.
And it was also an era where, like, someone could do that for you, and then the band could play near you, and it was like $10.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting to the show was a whole different ordeal, but, you know, that's
right. That's different, but the option was there and it was affordable.
Absolutely. So I don't know, that kind of, This has been a long fucking preamble. I apologize for this because all of this leads to an email we got that I kind of found fascinating. I don't know how you feel about it, Jordan.
Yeah, no, it's a very good email. And if people ever want to email us, whether it's they want to talk about the show, something they want to hear us talk about, you don't need to tell us when we get something wrong. That's fine.
Yeah,
we forget about what we say like 5 minutes after the show's done recording.
We're on the record here. I do have some minor brain damage. I mess things up. It's fine. I don't care.
I played contact sports for about 20 years. Cut me some slack.
Yeah.
So if people ever want to email us, toiletofhellradio@gmail.com or toiletofhell@gmail.com. We read it all. We see it all. So, you know, don't hesitate. If you don't want to message us on, like, any of the social media stuff, that's a good way to talk to us. Or, I don't know, request a song or say, hey, check this out.
Yeah.
We're around. We read it. But we got a very good email from a listener, Sam, with the subject, some thoughts on Zoomer metalheads, which, I mean, yes, we could use help with that because we're old and out of touch.
We are old and out of touch, and we want to understand what's going on because it's kind of out of our reach right now. This is all, it's all like on the youth, and we are not those guys anymore. So fucking let us know what's going on.
Right. We're old and confused, but we want to learn. We want to understand. We're not completely shut off. So Sam says, hey guys, longtime fan and listener of the podcast. And I just wanted to comment on Zoomer metalheads or Gen Z metalheads because the topic has come up a few times on recent podcasts. And I felt that maybe as a younger metal fan born in 2000,
Jesus,
all my bones are turning to dust. Let me tell you about the Clinton administration. I could offer some potentially valuable food for thought. From my perspective, much of the early and mid 2010s metal landscape was defined by somewhat isolated online communities with occasional overlap in music blogs.
Does that check out to you?
I suppose. I mean, I guess this is around the time where I started going away from online communities. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was involved in like message boards and talking to friends about music and being able to easily illegally download things.
Yeah.
As far as isolated online communities, I guess I wonder if like social media probably splintered a lot of those communities. And it's just, we're all on Twitter talking about metal versus, you know, you're here talking about this, you're here talking about that. So I don't know. I'd have to think about it. What about you?
It kind of does. I spent a lot of time on isolated communities, either focus on, you know, metal or hardcore. It was again, another thing that was really good for my brain. So, I think there is some validity to that.
There's still a tangible separation between deathcore fans or gent fans, for example, which existed pretty firmly outside of the realm of the coverage of sites like yours, Stereo Gum, No Clean Singing, or Invisible Oranges. This coupled with the mainstream death of metal due to radio collapsing and piracy/streaming So many younger metal fans who wanted to delve a little deeper beyond the more popular acts, in my tangential experience, good usage of the word, were informed by a combination of message boards and journalists' opinions. These spaces provide a lot of detailed and biased information on the broader genre space, reinforcing knowledge of classic albums from different subgenres, but also taking with them certain negative sentiments. That's fair.
I agree with that
more general.
100%.
Yeah. And it was that way too in the past.
Yeah.
Think in its own ways, even going back further than like when we were growing up with your metal magazines, there, whether it's a Kerrang or Metal Force or whatever, could make or break a band with a good review. Whereas now, I don't know. I think it just pretty much reviews reinforce how people feel about things.
I think you're right.
But maybe I'm projecting. I don't know. More generally, though, More generally, though, this still maintained partitions between fans of different subgenres and also ensured that plenty of the listener base for certain styles was reflective of the user base for Reddit or the consumers of music journalism. Black metal fans went to black metal shows, hardcore dudes went to hardcore shows, etc., and it was primarily dudes in their late 20s and older. I think the turning point is 2020 with the pandemic and primarily TikTok, which just explodes any traditional notions of metal sex. TikTok's algorithm is still a mystery, and it's truly mind-blowing what bands find success on there from heavy music. I've seen bands like Blood Incantation and Primitive Man get a lot of traction across the app, for example, but the way it suggests and promotes music with no consideration for genre or history is bizarre. Seemingly niche groups punch far outside of the traditional audience, so you end up with fans of several different related subcultures all engaging with out-of-pocket groups that we never expect. I'll stop there for a second. How do you feel about, say, bands getting attention on TikTok? Like, does that transfer to actual... Sorry. Does that... listens beyond or album sales or seeing them live, or is just... I heard this 15 seconds of a song. I like this 15 seconds. I'll add it to my playlist.
I think it absolutely transfers to, if nothing else, ticket sales. Because I've seen bands that get, you know, popular on TikTok for whatever reason. They suddenly go up an echelon or two where they're able to do bigger venues than before. And again, like,
I know that's worked out for Ghost, for example.
Yeah.
But I think that does still boil down to, do you like this music or not? Like, I don't know if a random person's going to see a 15 or whatever, 10-second TikTok of someone dancing and Blood Incantation is playing, if they don't already kind of like that sort of thing.
Sure. I got to say,
are they going to be into it?
Out of all the examples you could give me for a band that got a lot of attraction on TikTok, Primitive Man is not one I would have ever guessed in 1 million years.
And I don't use TikTok, so I don't know about this stuff. But is it more due to what the video is and there's music attached to it, or is the music a part of it? You know what I'm saying? Like, if it's a good looking person dancing and Primitive Man music is playing, or do people like it because of the music, or they like it because the pretty person's dancing?
You got to ask somebody that has a little more familiarity with the subject matter than me, because I also don't know, man.
So I got to, like, go to a place where there's young people and take a knee and ask them to explain technology to me?
Yeah, you got to sit backwards on a chair.
Turn my hat backwards and rap to them?
Exactly.
I'm just curious about these things. That's all. It's not a yes or no answer. It's like, does it really work? And if it does, how much?
Sure.
Much of the younger generation's listening habits are entirely free from the traditional constraints we're used to, and certain brands of internet or meme bands are far more well-known than older, beloved groups. Kecht Arok and Def Heaven have far more popularity amongst TikTok users than an Emperor or Dark Throne, which is crazy, but makes sense with the consumption the app promotes. I've been to several shows in the past year where I've just been astounded by the diversity of subcultures and age groups, like squads of rap fans at noise rock shows, or hyperpop fans at brutal death metal shows. Broadly, I think this is a good thing, but it's certainly a bit jarring when I go to see dissonant bands like Knoll and Thantafetzeth. I can never pronounce that name.
Thantafaxeth.
We'll go with that. And half of the audience is made up of teenagers wearing mainstream rock shirts.
Weird.
Now, again, this is a question of mine that I'm just not in tune with things. Is it because they genuinely like the music? Is it because they've heard the 15, 20 seconds of it from a viral video? Or is it because it's something to do and it's somewhere to go and options are to do things are becoming more and more limited, especially for younger people?
I guess the answer to that is, if you are the act that all of these kids are going to see, does it really matter? Do you care if they actually like your music, or are you just happy that they're there?
And you're happy that they're there, but you also prefer that they come back.
Sure, sure.
You know, if it's one time, I guess that's cool, but it's the same as you just dragging along someone to the show. But, you know, I'm just curious. I don't know either way. And is this like the new normal for bands where you have to hope that you get lucky and people decide to like the breakdown in one of your songs and you've been around for 20 years and this is finally it? Or is it something you can build off of? Like for a Ghost, yes, you can build off it because you hear one 30-second song, you'll probably like everything else. But for some of these bands, especially for like a Blood Incantation, where their songs are expansive and can go for 9 minutes, and maybe in a video you hear like the really pretty ambient guitar spacey part and not, you know, the rest of the 8 minutes where someone's, you know, yelling about sacrificing alien goats.
So I do like his explanation for this making people more eclectic in their taste, because I remember distinctly like the introduction of the iPod kind of blowing apart existing preconceptions of people that listen to maybe exclusively one or two genres. Suddenly, it was less album focused, more shuffle based, people going from listening to, you know, country to rock to rap, etc. And this allows for a little bit more, rather than like, you know, somebody whose iPod shuffled from Garth Brooks to Metallica being like, whoa, that's pretty wild, isn't it? It's these kids going from like, I don't know, fucking Juju to, you know, whatever hyperpop band is. I don't fucking know a single one of them. 200 Gex, however many Gex they got.
And is it all just memes? Is that what it is now?
I think that's a part of it, to be honest with you. I know that people crave the novelty of seeing the thing in real life that they've seen on their phones. That's just something about human nature with a social media mindset. I can't explain it, but people go apeshit over that. I am a little bit celebrity opposed myself. I don't really care to get into that whole kind of thing, but that is a real, very real phenomenon.
And it's all based on zeros and ones from a thing on your phone that's telling you what to like.
In some ways, I'm just happy something is happening here, Jordan. Because we've seen what's, you know, things have gone the last decade or so, and it's been pretty fucking dire. So is this ideal?
Yeah.
Probably not. But is it better than what we have seen happening? Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I mean, it's good for the smaller bands that would never find any audience otherwise. So that's a good way of looking at it. I just feel like something like this is not sustainable.
No, absolutely not. But I mean, you and I have groused for almost 10 years now about how we need something to change. Well, despite our complaints, things are changing and things are happening. And that's just the way it goes. So I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see how this plays out, especially if anything changes with the US government deciding that China is now no longer an adequate custodian of your fucking TikTok experience.
Yeah, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
I don't use it, so it makes no difference to me.
Sure.
But it's, you know, the questions rise. If I know it happens on Spotify, certain bands will start showing up a lot more in playlists because they paid to get on there.
Yeah.
Might have the same thing for this sort of thing.
I don't know.
Especially with.
Sorry, I will tell you that I make it a point to skip every single fucking band that's ever paid to get on a Spotify playlist and try to remember their names so I never listen to them again.
You know what, especially with how influencer heavy TikTok is, mm-hmm. Oh, where you see the same people, I don't know, doing whatever it is they do, and there's collaborations. Why not pay a popular TikTok person to have your song in it for 15 seconds? Because there's a good chance that the same thing can happen, and maybe people will come to your show too.
No, absolutely. Like, payola is going to be the last thing remaining until the sun burns out. So spend your money wisely, guys.
So if you're an extreme band, like you have a chance with something like this, I just wonder if it's something that you can truly build off of. Like, it's not just in the now. A video came out 2 months ago and you're on tour and more people are coming. Like, I'm interested 2 years from now when the next album comes out and the next touring cycle comes out, if this is something that like TikTok can be a business model for you, and that's like where your focus should be versus being on other social media or, you know, focusing on writing albums. Where I know, like, I'm friends with someone who's in a pop band who, like, they just do singles, and like their hope is the single does well. And it's just, man, you're still doing this 10, 15 years later. I don't know if it's successful or not. And no, it's, you'll see what happens. But if this is what the kids like, then maybe that is something that bands should consider, at least whether they want to do it or not.
Something to think about, but I don't know. I realize this episode didn't have a whole lot of a point to it, but it is, I don't know. I do like to consider how things used to be versus the perspective of what they are now. I don't know. We'll never really get a grasp on anything because that's the nature of this. You get too old, you no longer stay part of it, but curious to see.
Yeah, well, it's I think it's good. I mean, something like this email is super helpful to put things in perspective.
Sure.
For two people who are very much in tune with music, just not with what people who are younger and more, whether it's phone focused, internet focused, whatever you want to call it, more in tuned with some of the newer things that are coming out, and compared to what we listened to 20 years ago, we were told what to listen to by radio people and, you know, labels and all that. Now you're just being told what to listen to with more options, but it's not something that maybe you'll hear for a long time. Like, some of these charts, these songs were on for months.
Yeah,
just popular music being played every hour on the hour versus something that is popular for the next week.
Yeah,
until you forget about it. Like, I don't know, countless memes that you may see on Twitter or something like that. It's here and it's gone. And for the most part, sometimes you'll remember stuff for a long time because it's genuinely funny or people have been creative with it, or it's, I don't know, a SpongeBob thing that's gone in a week.
I don't know. I've never seen a fucking episode of SpongeBob in my life. I find the proliferation of SpongeBob memes to be deeply alienating.
I have not watched any either. It was I was too old at the time and had zero interest. But the point is, it remains to be seen how many bands I think can find success out of new, quick, fast food versions of music delivery. And for some, yeah, you could definitely build off it and whatever, find your voice or find your audience. I think it's, and I know this from someone else who's involved in the music business, who plays in bands with like pop people. Like, they're the background bassist for a Miley Cyrus. Just the constant need to update social media.
Yeah.
And to like be a celebrity, even when you're not a celebrity, and constantly engage people and have to put out, whether it's videos or remix or all this sorts of things, it is a full-time job in the hopes that people see the things that you were doing. And that's so much harder than it used to be. And, you know, I hope bands are able to have success without having to do all of that.
Yeah, man, that sounds awful. And I can't imagine trying to like sell yourself like a product. Like, this show will never take off because that's not something we're going to do.
No, we are not a brand. We are too old and tired and lazy and not attractive enough to do any of that.
But I will say some of this shit does kind of works on me too. I don't know. I saw a lot of meme discourse about Steely Dan on Twitter over the last couple of years, and now I listen to a lot of Steely Dan. So, I don't know. Tough to say. We all crave a little bit of novelty, I guess.
I guess there's novelty, but for newer bands, can you sustain off novelty? Some can. There's plenty of bands that had one hit and they're still doing their thing, but I don't know.
Well, you
like
know,
what happens when the next thing comes along, you know, the next TikTok or something like that? And do you have to start all over again? We talk about being a celebrity on Twitter and how it doesn't mean anything. Like, it doesn't matter that you have 50,000 followers. You're just still some guy.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're constantly hustling to have a website or sell yourself or have t-shirts or whatever.
Well,
can the same be said for bands? For some of them, they can. I don't know.
For some people, one hit's enough. Something to think about if you want to write a song about, hey, mister, I like your daughter, want to eat her like ice cream, et cetera, et cetera.
But those usually aren't the people who are in a van driving across the country playing a dive bar on a Tuesday night.
Yeah. Well, I think we got to call it here. What do you think?
Yeah, so we're old and have yelled at clouds enough, but thank you, Sam, for the email. That does help us understand kind of where things are now. So when we say like, oh, it's not on the radio, it doesn't necessarily matter. It's in a popular video and that's good.
Got to be good enough. Well, if you like this show, I really cannot recommend enough subscribing to our Patreon, where we have, guess what, even more episodes of this shit. So give us a little bit of money. You get a whole lot of content. That's how this trade works. Anything else?
You can email us, toiletofhell@gmail.com, toiletofhellradio@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, patreon.com/toiletofhell. We are still going through Nuclear Blast roster. We are going to finish it this month or next month, hopefully. And we are on the slow march towards episode 500, where we have a few fun things planned. So yeah, Stay tuned for that.
Yeah, the ending is mass suicide. So look forward to that. All right, everybody. We'll
murder
see you next...
suicide.
Murder suicide. There we go. Yeah. All right, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.